Hello there, Britain. This is Max. I'm here with Stacy. This is the truth about markets. The Tories now run all levers of power are controlled by the Tories. It's very exciting because now finally the enemy is clear. The enemy has been painted. So we will begin the assault in earnest this week. Stacey, it was always confusing to have a coalition government because they could always point the finger at each other and blame each other. Now, with just the Tories, we have the final showdown. We're here in London. We moved here to attack banksters and financial terrorists. Now, they've painted themselves into a corner. It's time for the elimination.
Oh, well, speaking of elimination, of course, the Lib Dems have been almost eliminated from the electoral map. Only 8 seats. They lost the one in which Resonance sits, which is Bermondsey and Old Southwark. So we lost Simon Hughes here. Now, it was a pretty epic result, and almost hours, just hours actually, after the election results came in, it was announced that there's going to be new cuts to the disabled fund, helping them back into work. So the austerity is coming. It's going to be harsh. It's going to be fierce. Many people will be celebrating, at least those 37% of the voting population, that 6 million people or 11 million people, whatever it is, that voted for the Tories. And house prices, I saw in some headlines, are expected to continue to soar now. And they were up 1.6% in April alone, which, of course, incomes were not up at all. So we're going to have more of this, but even more, like deeper, harder, bigger.
Yeah, well, Liberal Democrats were never an opposition. Labor was never an opposition. New Labor, famously, as Thatcher called it, was her greatest invention. The Greens were not in any kind of opposition. The SNP, of course, is an opposition, but they've gone to the point where they want to secede, essentially, and separate from United Kingdom entirely, which is a noble effort that we have always supported from day one, even though some of our friends in the political class were not on board for that one. And my point is that there's never really been an opposition. These opposition forces have been wiped off the table, and they should be, because none of them are worthy of the name opposition. So now we have the ability for a clean mano-a-mano duel at high noon between the forces of who are counter to the financial terrorists. We're totally anti-financial terrorism. And we have now very clearly a group of financial terrorists who are huddled together in Westminster. And we have the ability, using all of our tactics, we were relaunching the boycott and short sale hedge fund, for example. We found a funding mechanism. We've got StartJoin. We've got StartCoin, quantitative easing for the people. So this will be the lines drawn, and it's very exciting because it'll be very easy to win.
Yep. And so I noticed another thing. Well, first of all, you know, for the people listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, there are many young people out there in the audience. You have the youngest MP elected to Parliament since 1667. Youngest person since 1667. She's from Scotland. She ousted Douglas Alexander. I know there's Douglas Alexander and Danny Alexander who both lost their seats in Scotland. And that brings me to another point, is that I noticed that a lot of the big wigs that lost their seats, like Douglas Alexander, Danny Alexander, Charles Kennedy, Vince Cable, Ed Balls, these are the people that are almost every week on Question Time and Newsweek and Newsnight. So it really seems like, you know, you see their faces all the time and they got punished for it, for being on the mainstream media.
Well, the entire facade has been wiped off the face of the earth. All those people. You got a new group coming in. But what's your point? There's going to be more different guests on those shows?
Well, obviously, they'll have to have different guests. It'll all be new faces. Because,
yeah, like who?
I don't know. Whoever replaces these people. Obviously, it'll be more S&P sort of faces on there, because There's no, they, you know, they tend to get opposition politicians that come in because nobody in power likes to go on those sort of shows because they only have something to lose, nothing to gain. So, you know, all those guys are gone. So they're not going to, there's no point talking to them, having them on the show, because the point is to talk about what the government is doing. So it's not like Vince Cable has any power to affect outcomes anymore. So they're going to talk to this like 20-year-old Scottish woman who ousted, you know, political bigwig. So I thought that was interesting about the election, is all these very, very well-known faces. Some of the only faces I pretty much know in the political space were ousted.
Mm. Yeah, well, I'm reading this piece here in the Telegraph by a student, Lewis Barber. He's he says he's not a shy Tory. He's he's an overt Tory, and he says that the shy Tories who have not made their views known, and this is what caused this landslide victory for the Tories, because anytime conservatives voice their opinion, especially on campuses, etc., they get shouted down as, horrible, horrible human beings, as we do on this show every week. And so he speaks, talking about why he's a Tory supporter. And, he goes through the same list of nonsense in terms of what the Tories have accomplished, talking about job creation, which is false. They talk about cutting the debt, which is false, and other things that supposedly the Tories have been involved with. But it doesn't really matter much, because the entire country has been floated by foreign money on the margins. 30% of the debt is foreign owned, and we're about to enter a correction in the bond market, which means that the UK government, which is indebted, and this Ponzi scheme that is the asset price bubble will pop. And so now let's try to get this bubble pop as quickly as possible. We have ways of doing it, and then this is going to be a very exciting, I think. Finally, we have all the tricks to keep the bubble alive for so long have now run out of runway. Now it's time for the real showdown.
Yes, the shy Tory. Of course, all the polls were horribly wrong. They absolutely predicted quite rightly what Scotland would be, because it apparently, when a pollster calls a home, apparently people weren't ashamed to admit that they were going to vote for SNP. In England, it appears people were ashamed to admit that they were going to vote Conservative. The same thing happens to Netanyahu, as he recently stated that he always loses in the polls. He always loses the elections in the polls, but always wins at the voting booth, because people are ashamed to admit that they're, might be anti-immigrant, for example. Now, of course, one of the few locations that actually swung to Labour, despite losing almost the entirety of Scotland but one seat, is London. London swung behind Labour, and that is as a result, essentially, what I've been reading, of the Tory policies of housing bubbles, because now you have more British voters in London who are renters and who are driven out to the margins. So the suburbs used to be traditionally conservative voters, but now there's so many renters out there that, in the rental homes of the rentier who owns it, who are often being financed by the state taxpayer-funded coffers of, housing benefit. So a lot of these people have been forced out into constituencies that used to be conservative. Now they're renters. They have no hope of ever getting on the housing bubble. But the housing bubble, this is one of the signature policies of the Tories, was that they were going to force private housing associations to sell their homes to tenants. So they were going to basically seize private property and hand it to a select few, lucky few. And this, however, this housing bubble, can it continue, Max, if this 30-year bond bubble is over, as witnessed in the dramatic turnaround we've seen in the bond market in the past 2 weeks?
No, and it's this country thinks that they can survive purely on Ponzi-onomics. And so when the bubble pops and they have nobody actually there to do any of the day-to-day jobs, then the economic regression will be exacerbated because there's nobody there to pick up the slack. I remember during the 2008 crash in France where we were living, the state flipped the switch overnight, and you had thousands and thousands of workers hit the streets starting to clean the cathedrals. They reduced VAT on meals at restaurants. They did all these things. There's no such mechanism here in the UK because it's been thrown to the consultants who, when the going gets tough, will simply pack their bags and leave. Nobody's going to stick around for the bear market. They love making money during the bull market. But, the bear market is they leave the mess for others to clean up. So everything has to be renationalized. Wages will have to go up to entice people to actually work. And you go back to the trend line of what the economy should have been had it not been allowed to grow with the aid of artificial stimulus that is unsustainable and causes incredible social dislocation, wealth and income gaps, and violence.
Well, I was looking at this chart somebody sent me from the Office of Budget Responsibility, and it's called Future Housing Affordability Ratios. So right now in 2015, it's at 8.2 times average earnings in the UK is the average house price. By 2019, so in the next 3 years, they said it'll be 9.2. So obviously, it could be irrational longer than, for example, in Canada, where Mark Carney previously destroyed the economy, not yet apparent to most, but, housing affordability, I think, is like 11 times income there. But here, so it does, the bubble can go further, providing, of course, interest rates continue to be low.
That's going to definitely be an attempt to keep interest rates low. Now, last week, we saw in Germany anyway, the German bond jumped by the most it has in 70 years or so. There was this huge jump in yields. Not the price of the bond, but in yields, meaning that the bonds went down. And so, that is a foretelling of what can happen and what is about to happen. Now, whether or not what will happen is the European Central Bank will step in and they will aggressively buy in the market those as many bonds as is required to bring the interest rates down again. But, all that debt goes on to the European Central Bank balance sheet, which has now, over the past 18 months, accumulated close to €1 trillion worth of debt. The British Bank of England has, under the Osborne regime, they went from £800 million of debt to £1.5 trillion of debt. The U.S. government has got close to $20 trillion in debt. On the Japanese central bank has close to 100% of GDP. They have close to 17. They just announced that they're increasing their debt to over ¥250 billion. So all of these things are linked together in a tenuous manner, supported by a very delicate relationship, kind of like the asking how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, which was the question during the medieval times. The answer is, during a bear market, the answer is zero. So we will quickly and quite decisively see what happens when you remove the punch bowl from the party. When is this going to happen? Well, I think that if you read the remarks of professional money managers like over there, the ex-PIMCO money manager, Bill Gross, who's still in the business, or Mark Faber, or some other prominent private equity fund and hedge fund people have come out in the last week and said that it looks like this 28-year bull market in bonds, the longest bull market in bonds in history, a bull market that's taken prices of British sovereigns to 300-year highs, taken American sovereigns up to 240-year highs, taken Spanish, Irish, other bonds to multi-hundred-year highs is at the end. So, therefore, if you enter a bear market that lasts 5, 10, or 15 years, all these gains are completely destroyed.
Yeah, they're completely destroyed. And that's one of the things we covered on the next episode of Kaiser Report, which is a Bloomberg article about the German Bund. And what's been happening because of 0% interest rates, or ZERP as it's called, or quantitative easing, QE, is you've had pension funds, so your pensions possibly, have been chasing yield. And what they've done is they've taken on a huge amount of duration risk, as I call. They've been looking for yield anywhere. And of course, in the German bond, everything up to 10 years was negative. So there was no yield there for them. So they had to go out to 30 years. But as Bloomberg was explaining, that's very risky because when the bond market turns, it's the further out duration bonds like the 30-year where you lose significantly. In the past 2 weeks alone, in 14 days, German bond investors of the 30-year bonds lost 25 years worth of the income they were going to get from the yield. So that's gone. So, you know, these are the people that are going to be losing, and you could see a bond panic. These people that just lost 25 years worth of yield could be panic selling.
Yeah, well, the panic selling, it's the opposite, obviously, of the manic buying. You know, folks feel like they are panic buying into these markets. And when it reverses, of course, the panic on the downside is much more extreme. You know, the old saying that markets climb a staircase up and drop down an elevator shaft on the way down. And because the panic fear is a much more powerful emotion than hope. And we just saw that in the Tory win. I mean, the Tory win was based on fear. Fear of Scotland, fear of Russia, fear of who knows, you know, what existential threat they parade around the BBC every single night. There was no attempt to address the fact that HSBC, Lloyds, Barclays, RBS are
HSBC.
Yeah, they've all been involved in massive fraud. And stolen hundreds of billions of pounds over the past 5 years. Nobody wants to focus on that. But it does reduce the stability of the economy when you remove the foundation. So then all it takes is one. Remember the 2008 crash started when one analyst in France said that he thought that the bonds on their in a, one particular fund were overvalued. And that set off a domino effect, like the avalanche that just hit the Mount Everest recently, which caused global markets to seize up. Now, the response from these central bankers was not to reform banks to make it so that something like that couldn't happen again. Their reaction was to make it easier for banks to take on more debt because they needed to take on 3, 4, 5, 10 times more debt to recover from the damage and do exactly what you just said. They refinanced everything so that the maturities were later, 20-year, 30-year, 40-year. I think Spain has issued a 100-year bond. So these are the most risky, this is the riskiest way to solve a problem. That's like saying, I got a flat tire on the highway. So the way I'm going to fix it is I'm going to push the car out into the center of an 11-lane highway. I'm going to park it diagonally so it's covering one or two lanes. I'm going to take out a screwdriver the size of my thumb to try to take the tire off out there in the middle with, you know, naked during a typhoon. And that's my solution to fixing this problem. Well, it'll work for, you know, until it doesn't work. And then when it doesn't work spectacularly. So there they are. They fixed the problem by driving out to the middle of a 20-lane highway naked with no wheels on. And for the first few months, everything is A-OK. But of course, now we'll see.
Yeah, well, speaking of, you know, you said the 2008 crisis started when some guy at a French bank said the bonds in one fund were overvalued. Well, it kind of happened this way is that formerly of PIMCO, Bill Gross, tweeted that German bonds were the short of a lifetime, that he said this is the best bet he could see in his entire career was to short German bonds. And then, of course, they did crash.
Yeah, you know, this is a call that's been made now for several years to call the top of the bond market, and it's been wrong for several years. But it doesn't mean that it won't be right probably in the near future. So, as far as a 28-year market, if you are wrong, you know, you can't pick the date within a year or two. that's not too bad considering it's been going on for 28 years. So once it does reverse itself, you know, there will be people, of course, who are short these bonds who will make spectacular gains. And that'll be confusing for those who are losing lots of money because they'll hear about people who are making lots of money. And then they'll be like, how does that work? How is that possible? I don't get it. And the financial illiteracy quotient will rear its ugly head once again. But at some point that the bell will be rung. And, you know, and I started on Wall Street in 1983. The markets had been in a bear market for 16 years. Nobody wanted to be a stockbroker. The office was half empty. People were working nights as teachers and cab drivers to make a living because you couldn't make a living as a stockbroker. Then they rang a bell. And actually, it was in the summer of 1982. And it wasn't Robert Prechter, but it was Marty Shafroff. It was another fella who did a story in Barron's that weekend and laid out his case for a bull market. And everyone said, of course, this is wrong. They've been calling a bull market for the last 5, 6, 7 years. It's never happening. We're in a permanent bear market. It's never, ever going to go up ever again. And, well, guess what? It went from 800 on the Dow to it's now at 18,000 over the ensuing 25 years. And a lot of people have made billions. I don't think there was one billionaire in America at that time. Now there's over 2,000. There are over a million people with more than $100 million. There are 600,000. There's a lot of money out there. So, but at the time, it was common wisdom to assume that nothing like this would ever happen. So now here we are 25 years later, 28 years later in the bond bull market, and you have a sea change. You have a directional change. You have a secular move, not a cyclical, but a secular move where it's a reversal that lasts for 5, 10, 15 years, where every single day bond prices go down. Every day for 15 years. And, you know, that's a completely different situation. The last two generations have no idea that this is even possible. They've been told, you know, this current generation, they've been told that the central bankers can push a button and make, property prices go up. And that there's no surer bet in life than to get on the property ladder. And they believe it. And when it changes, they're going to be like, wait a minute, you lied. You lied to me. And they'll be like, yeah, well, we're off in Morocco right now or Monaco, in our yacht. And you can forward your mail to somewhere, but we have nothing to say.
Yep. And, markets have stayed more and more irrational. A lot of people thought this was coming a year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, but there's always been somebody willing to take on more and more debt and a bank willing to give more and more debt. And, 10 times your income in London, it's something like 18 times average income for property prices here. So, there's always been somebody willing to because they think bonds, can continue going deeper and deeper negative. That they can pay, they'll be paid more and more by the government to lend more and more. So they thought it couldn't end. But when it ends, the other thing is that more and more of the collateral underlying this is breaking apart. Not only are we seeing more and more, climate disasters, but you see things like massive layoffs across America and Canada in the fracking and oil industry sector, where the average income, by the way, is $98,000 in the U.S. It's something like $125,000 in Canada. And in Canada, they just, in the last month, they let off 20,000 oil workers in Alberta. So if you multiply that by $125,000, that's a lot of money being sucked out, a lot of income lost. And of course, we look at those numbers like employment, so they might lose their $125,000 and go and join, get a job at Walmart for $15,000. So it looks like employment stays the same. But the fact is there's been a lot of income loss in a sort of precarious income inequality situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's the old saying, buy the rumor, sell the fact. And the Tories are now, remember, let me give you this analogy. Remember, Barack Obama's finest day in office was his inauguration day. And for 8 years almost now, it's gone straight into the toilet. They never fulfilled a single promise. He's now looking out over the American landscape with cities on fire, erupting in mass violence. And his whole presidency has been a joke. So the Tories, it could be their finest day in office could have been last Friday. That could be it. It could be straight downhill from here. I see Alex Salmond is already, who's now in the House of Commons with 56 MPs from Scotland. He's already trolling the Prime Minister and suggesting that the Conservative majority in Parliament will erode and change within months. So they're going to be out there fighting the good fight. Should I go back up to Scotland, maybe back up to the Yes Bar in Glasgow? Stacey, what do you think?
I think so. I think the people want to see you up there. But of course, you know, the problem with what that is, okay, Obama was promising hope, and hope is, and good things are very difficult to deliver. I mean, the only time you've seen that is post-World War II, and we've had victory, VE Day, of course, today or yesterday. So, you know, that's when all the good things were delivered to the United Kingdom, the health service, the welfare state, the infrastructure, all the stuff you see around you is basically delivered during those times when all fear had finally been eradicated. I think, you know, it's easier for the Tories to deliver on their hate promises, and they've promised to hate. They've promised to hate foreigners, immigrants, disabled, the poor, the people who are unemployed. So that's easier to deliver, and the people, it will satisfy a lot of people, but I don't know if it delivers necessarily a very, you know, brilliant economy.
Well, it's easy to deliver if you have, if your cost of funding is constantly falling. Now, for example, the Tories want to, you know, stoke this property bubble, but if the cost of funding starts going up, that won't happen. They want to do privatization schemes. If the cost of funding goes up, it's not going to happen. They won't be able to get cheap labor from overseas because the pound could be crashing. So they've got to go to the local workforce, but of course that's going to be much more expensive. And they won't be able to fund it because the cost of funding will be constantly going up. And so remember, Sarkozy took office in France, going to be the Bill Clinton of France, but then the bond market crashed and he didn't do any of his reforms. And he was chased out of office because his timing was all wrong. By the time France wanted to have their Margaret Thatcher moment, the bond market was not in the mood. Now, once again, after this big rally, bond market, I don't think, is going to be in the mood. The bond vigilantes that Paul Krugman says are invisible and will never, ever rear their ugly head again, I disagree. The bond vigilantes, they are going to make their presence known. And it's only got about 15 seconds left, so we must say goodbye.
So that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM in London. Tune in next time.
All right, this is Max and Stacey on Resonance 104.4. Bye, y'all.